Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. In July 2002, authorities were called to a home in Eastlake, Ohio, after a neighbour reported smelling something pretty bad coming from within. There was no answer when the police knocked, so they broke in and found the body of a man lying on the bathroom floor in the fetal position, severe injuries to his head and a gun underneath his body. It was quite clear that this man had chosen to end his own life quite a few days beforehand, as the body was already covered in flies and severe decomposition had set in, to the point that he was already unrecognisable. Although this was clearly a very sad scene, no one at the time thought this was going to be anything more than just an open and shut case, an obvious suicide. Next of kin we contacted, and that would be that. They never expected for this to become what it did, a tangled web of identity theft and lies, a man who colleagues described as odd, isolated and eccentric, a hermit who only left home to work with no friends or family. A look around the home, a studio apartment, told authorities that his name was Joseph Newton Chandler III, but they found nothing personal. There were no contact details for friends or family, no family photos, no evidence that he had anyone in his life at all. He didn't even leave a suicide note. He listed a sister, Mary Wilson, as an emergency contact at a previous job, but they quickly found that the address he'd given just didn't exist, or it did exist, but it wasn't houses, it was just this empty lot, no one was there. But luckily they did find his social security number, and seeing as he did have $82,000 left in a bank account but no next of kin, probate lawyers embarked on a mission to find his relatives, some long lost lucky person to give this money to. They found that Joseph's father was Joseph Chandler II and his mum was Ellen Caber. Both had long since died, but experts attempted to find a member of the Caber family to give this small fortune to, and eventually tracked down Ellen Caber's niece, so Joseph's cousin. And it's here that they learn that Joseph Newton Chandler III had died alongside his parents on the 21st of December 1945, when he was just 8 years old. The family had been en route to visit extended family for Christmas and got into a car crash in northern Texas, and none of them survived. So whoever this man was in the apartment, it wasn't Joseph Newton Chandler III, although he'd clearly been living as him for many years, for decades. So who was this man really, and why had he been masquerading as someone else? Was he on the run? Was he a wanted criminal? Could uncovering his identity lead to the solving of another mystery? As you'll come to find out in this episode, he would eventually be identified, but we still to this day don't know why he went on the run. What was it he was trying to hide, or hide from? So it didn't take long after the discovery that this man wasn't who he said he was for federal officers to get involved. From the get-go, the US Marshal suspected that he could have been a criminal on the run, and that's a theory they ran with for many, many years. I mean, there are a limited number of reasons why somebody would live under a fake identity for so many years, why somebody would choose to be so isolated. Being on the run or a criminal is usually top of that list. So the top authorities took a lot of interest in this case. US Marshal Pete Elliott said to Cleveland.com back in 2014, "This is like chasing a ghost. He lived the perfect life of someone on the run. He had no friends, he never got in trouble, he just lived so very quietly. He knew exactly what he was doing." So let's go back to the very beginning, released to the beginning of Joseph Newton Chandler III, now miraculously back from the dead. In 1978, a man walked into a Social Security office in Rapid City, South Dakota, and told a tale about how he'd lost his Social Security card. In the United States, every single citizen, permanent resident, or even temporary working resident has a Social Security number. I know for those of you in the US, you'll already know this, but this kind of system is different country to country. For example, here in the UK, we have a national insurance number instead. Social Security numbers are 9 digits long. It's different for every single person. You get it, you keep it close to your chest. And it looks like if you need to get a job, if you're applying for government benefits, or if it's for identification purposes, like you need to have this number. If you don't have it, you can't work, or at least it'll be really, really hard to find a job. We don't know entirely how fake Joseph had the real Joseph Social Security number in the first place, or some sources say he didn't, some sources say he got hold of his birth certificate and used that instead, and it would have been quite easy to get hold of somebody's birth certificate all these years ago. For years before his identification, it was thought that perhaps fake Joseph maybe knew the Chandler family in real life, or maybe he'd read about the deaths in the newspaper way back when it happened and it always stuck with him. You've got to remember that this was the 1970s and things were simply not as strict as they are nowadays. There are a lot less barriers and safeguards in place to stop things like this from happening. If you wanted to get a copy of somebody's birth certificate and use that to get a social security number, you could do it quite easily because people weren't expecting others to do that. I mean, I suppose until something like this becomes a real problem, your baseline is just to trust people, isn't it? Which is really nice for the average person, maybe not so much for the government.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I really don't think it would have been that hard for this man, fake Joseph, to get hold of the Social Security card. It would have been quite easy for him. I mean, apparently he literally just paid $3 and that was it, done, sorted. From there, he could apply for all the documents that he needed to live his life as this person. It's thought that he lived in Rapid City, or at least nearby around this time, but then he moved to Cleveland where he worked for an engineering business. This man was a very talented electrical engineer and he had no problems walking into jobs and holding them down. Like, he didn't have a problem with his brain, like he was really quite intelligent. Although I do have no idea how this worked in terms of references, like did this job just never ask for a reference from his previous position? Did he make up some kind of lie as to why they couldn't contact the previous company? Because anything before this point, he would have been under a different name. People he worked with over the years in all these different companies have said that he was very competent at his job. There's no denying he did have skills when it came to electrical engineering. And let's face it, there's only a small subset of the population who that can be said about. It was very clear that this man had had some form of professional education in this field. I mean, in his home after his death, they found all sorts of machines and fun things that he'd clearly spent his time just tinkering with. For example, one of the things they found was a breaker box that automatically changed the channel when the ads came on. Like, that's pretty cool. Colleagues who knew him also said that he had a white noise machine that I think he'd made himself with headphones that he just carried around with him, and when he felt bothered by people, he would simply turn it on and tune them out, which honestly, quite relatable. This man moved around a decent amount over the years. He had his time in Cleveland, we know he was in Cincinnati and Philadelphia for a bit, and then he ended his life in Eastlake, Ohio, which is actually where he stayed for quite a decent period of time. He'd lived in his small studio apartment there since 1986, and he'd worked at a chemical company nearby called Lubrizol for a long time before he was laid off in 1997, which is 5 years before his death. And I couldn't find any information about whether he got another job in those 5 years or if he just kind of partially retired or fully retired. When we're talking about Joseph in life, pretty much all we've got to go on is what his colleagues said about him. This was a man with zero friends, zero family, at least in this new life that he'd fashioned for himself. He was a hermit who kept himself locked away, disconnected from the outside world. It seems his closest friend was a guy called Mark that he worked with, but even then, acquaintances would probably be a better term. Mark has said that at one point Joseph told him that he had something to tell him, but the big reveal just never came. People say that Joseph was fine. He was just a guy who people knew was a bit odd, and so they kept him at arm's length, or he kept them at arm's length, maybe. One time in 1992, colleagues invited him to a Halloween party, more out of courtesy than anything else because he just never came to these things, and everyone was really, really shocked when he actually turned up dressed as an Al Capone gangster. He's clearly made the effort to dress up and go, and then he didn't speak to anyone the whole night. There are just three photos in existence of fake Joseph Newton Chandler in life, and two of them come from this party. The other is his driver's license photo. I think the two photos from this party with him dressed up as a gangster have done wonders for the tales spun about this mysterious man over the years, used as some sort of proof that he was a criminal in a past life, running from the law. It just goes with the narrative, doesn't it? Maybe it is correct, but as I've said, this guy was identified just a few years ago. But we're getting there, be patient. So yeah, this guy was deemed as a bit quirky by society. I mean, it is reported on one occasion that he drove himself 700 miles to an L.L. Bean flagship store, and when there weren't any parking spaces immediately available, he just turned around and went back home instead of simply waiting for one. It's said that he spent hours just watching TV static and also memorised license plate numbers very easily, but he could never remember his own birthday, which makes more sense when you remember that his birthday wasn't actually his birthday. I don't really like retrospectively diagnosing people because we never know for sure what people are suffering with in real life, but I do really find myself wondering if this man might have been autistic. Joseph definitely was not a social being. He tried to remain away from the centre of attention as much as he possibly could. And this could have been just who he was as a person, or it could have been the result of hiding away, not wanting anyone to look at him too closely. Which is why it's quite surprising that in February 1989, Joseph took himself to hospital with severe lacerations to his penis. He told doctors that he'd attempted to masturbate with a vacuum cleaner and had cut himself in the process. Now online, I've seen a lot of speculation. This one fact clearly makes him a sexual deviant. That he had clearly committed some big sex crime in his past and now he was lying and masturbating with a vacuum cleaner. And yeah, I do kind of see that train of thought. But if you're asking me, we're talking about a lonely guy who had no connections with anyone. A guy who also loved to tinker with machines and electrics. I really don't think it's out of the question that his story was genuine. I mean, we've all heard stories about the crazy things men and women, but mostly men, let's face it, can do when trying to get themselves off. He won't be the first to try and do it with a vacuum cleaner, and I'm sure he will not be the last. I mean, we've all seen Grey's Anatomy, right? Like, this is just something that people do. It really is. And I don't think it's any sign of him being a sexual deviant. He might have been. I don't think this is a clue. What is interesting about this hospital visit, though, is the doctor did say that he seemed to be a lot older than his stated age. If Joseph, the real Joseph, died aged 8 in 1945, that would have made him about 52 years old in 1989. And the doctor said that this Joseph, fake Joseph, seemed much older than that. And spoiler alert, he was right. So that was in 1989, he got laid off in 1997. It seems like he lived his last 5 years of life just very isolated and alone. And then 2 years before his death, he got diagnosed with colon cancer, advanced stage, likely terminal. He was going to die. 3 months before his death, he drove to a local gun store and purchased a gun, clearly knowing what he was going to do.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Although we don't know for sure, it does seem like he decided he would take his own life before the cancer did, probably not wanting a very slow demise with no one around to care for him, or maybe not wanting carers to pry into his life. Why he waited 3 months after buying the gun, we don't know, but maybe he just waited until he could really feel the cancer taking a hold. Perhaps he told himself that he'd do it when he started to feel certain symptoms. And then, on the 23rd of July 2002, he did it. He ended his own life. As I said earlier, authorities thought this was just going to be a simple open and shut case, and it was. It wasn't until they tracked down his quote-unquote cousin that the story unravelled, and by then, as per standard, he had already been cremated, which is not great when you're now dealing with an unidentified person. But lucky for authorities, a couple of years beforehand and all the hospital visits for the cancer, they had taken a tissue sample from Joseph that had been preserved. They had his DNA. Strangely enough though, they were never able to find a single one of his fingerprints in his apartment. The fingerprints on the gun itself were too smudged to get a proper reading on, and his entire apartment was clean. It seems he'd gone to a lot of effort to make sure they wouldn't find anything before he took his own life. Which is just like, that is a lot of effort to scrub your entire apartment clean of any fingerprints. You've got to be really, really thorough. In the days after his death, the police did take his computer to try and see if there was anything on there that could give them a clue as to a next of kin, but they swiftly dropped and broke it, so that is now useless in terms of evidence. Rumour has it there were some questionable searches on there, like looking up Nazism and plastic explosives, but there's no way now to confirm how true that is. It wasn't until 2014 that real progress was able to be made in this case, when the local Eastlake police dealing with this case called in US Marshal Pete Elliott, and he immediately just like took over this case, got really, really obsessed with it. He wanted to get it solved. He got straight down to work. He tracked down Joseph's DNA from the hospital and worked closely with official labs, state labs, to create a DNA profile of this man. Now remember here that they've been working under the assumption for years now that this was a violent criminal, a fugitive running from the law. So I expect that they thought they'd sent his DNA profile off to the National Crime Database and they'd quickly receive a match. But that was not the case. If this man had committed crimes, he'd certainly never been caught for them. And if he hadn't been caught, why did he go on the run? Apart from if he was maybe just being suspected, maybe they were about to arrest him, and then he went on a run. That could also make sense. In June 2016, Elliot contacted the incredible Dr. Colleen Fitzpatrick and Margaret Press about working on the Y-DNA that had already been generated by the state lab, which is the male chromosome that all males in a family share. As far back in a genetic family tree as you can go, every single male will share the exact same Y chromosome. When you're dealing with an unidentified male, this is a really great way to start the process of identifying them. You just need to find somebody with that same chromosome. So that was in 2016, and just the following year, in 2017, Colleen and Margaret would found the DNA Doe Project, which you all know is a non-profit I absolutely adore. Their core mission is to identify John and Jane Does using genetic genealogy. And yes, in March 2018, the first person the DNA Doe Project would identify would indeed be Joseph Chandler. In the beginning of this process, they searched public online genealogy databases. They didn't look at private sites like 23andMe or Ancestry.com, they just used what was available publicly. And in those initial searches, they found a single match to a man with the surname of Nicholas, a man who shared the same Y chromosome as Joseph. This man they connected to was actually very interested in family trees himself, and he could trace back his lineage to a colonial man hundreds of years before. So here he was with a pretty ready-made family tree. They tested out three more males in that family tree just to test out the legitimacy, and yeah, it was pretty much confirmed that Joseph matched all of their Y DNA. They had found the right tree. And all the men had the surname Nicholas or some derivative of that, like Nichols. It made sense that this man, this unidentified man, would also have the same surname. That is if he wasn't adopted or illegitimate, which really would have thrown a spanner in the works, but luckily he wasn't. From there, they just had to keep testing cousins until they got closer, zoning in on the correct branches of the family tree. And then they found a Nichols family in New Albany in Indiana. This was a family with four sons, all of whom had died by this point, apart from one. This son had never been reported as dead, but he had gone missing years beforehand, and this was a man called Robert Ivan Nichols. And what would you know, Robert had a surviving son. In fact, he had multiple sons, but the one they contacted was Phil Nichols, who was living in Cincinnati. US Marshals knocked on his door and informed him of what was going on, and luckily he did agree to take a DNA test, which of course showed a match. The man known for decades as Joseph Newton Chandler III was officially Robert Nichols. Phil has said that his dad was always a very quiet man who didn't really interact with his kids, his three sons. He told the Plain Dealer he was a rather unusual person. He was there and he wasn't. He was like a stranger who lived in our house. He was with us, but he rarely interacted with us. Through Phil, the authorities have slowly been able to piece together a story of this man, or at least a big portion of the story. Robert had grown up in New Albany in Indiana, and he joined the Navy when he finished high school, stationed in San Francisco. He served in World War II on the USS Aaron Ward, which on the 3rd of May 1945 was bombed by the Japanese off the coast of Okinawa. Robert was just 18 years old and he managed to survive, but suffered back and hip injuries from the flying shrapnel. A newspaper at the time reported that he'd cared for the wounded and dying for hours. He was endlessly pumping water out of the ship to stop it from drowning, to stop other people from drowning, despite his own pretty bad wounds. When he returned, he received the Purple Heart for his bravery. And this was not the type of man investigators had expected to find here. They thought they were going to find a criminal, not a selfless hero. The war really did a number on him. When he returned from war, he went out into the backyard and burned his Navy uniform. And it's thought that he must have suffered with quite severe PTSD, understandably. And that could explain some things. I can imagine being in a situation like he was would have been so unbelievably traumatizing for him. Like, trauma like this can literally change the chemistry of the brain. He was only 18. I couldn't find any information on what he was like before the war, if he was always very introverted, always odd, or if this was kind of a new personality for him. But what I found really interesting is that this happened, the USS Aaron Ward happened, the same year the real Joseph died. And I wonder if there was some significance in that when Robert chose his identity to take on. And this also shows that the doctor was right. Robert was a lot older than Joseph, 10 years older. When he was saying he was 52 in the hospital, he would have actually been at least 62. In January 1947, Robert got married to Laverne Court, and together they had three sons, Phil, Charles, and David. In this time, Robert worked as a draftsman for General Electric, so he clearly always had an affinity towards this field, towards the electricity field. When Phil was just 10 years old in 1964, Robert divorced his wife. Apparently he had a good life, a good home, a relatively happy family. There's no obvious reason as to why he would want to walk away from this. At first, when he divorced Laverne, he told her very ominously, "In due time, you'll know why."
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall.com.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
But he didn't completely disappear at the beginning. He did it very slowly and quietly. He moved around the country for a bit. From 1964 to 1965, he lived in Dearborn in Michigan, where he told his parents he worked in the car industry. His sons did go to visit him once here, but he refused to let them stay with him, so they had to stay in a motel instead. In March 1965, he wrote to his parents saying that he'd moved to Richmond in California and told them not to worry about him. And then later that month, he mailed Phil a letter from Napa, California, and inside was just a penny with no note. And that's the last anyone ever heard from him. Even the way he disappeared was probably quite smart. He didn't just vanish one day, causing a commotion with the family contacting the authorities, with a missing person search ensuing. Like, no, he did it slowly, bit by bit, until people would just accept that he'd moved on and wouldn't worry about him. Between 1965 in Richmond and 1978, 13 years later, when he applied for Joseph's social security number in South Dakota, we have no information on Robert Nichols. He truly was a ghost. So this case is solved for the most part. His true identity was found. As far as anyone is aware, no crimes were committed. Robert Nichols has never been connected to anything. But he told his wife when he divorced her that in time, she'll know why. So what was he running from? What did he expect was going to come out? The general consensus is that he did commit some horrific crime, but nobody knows what that was. Or was he perhaps just incredibly mentally ill, perhaps suffering with PTSD or something else, and he convinced himself that he needed to disappear, that his family didn't want him? Or maybe he just didn't want to be a family man anymore, maybe he didn't want to be a dad or a husband, so he removed himself. But I don't know, it doesn't really make sense. Why the comment to his wife? That is so ominous. There is one huge theory in this case circulating the internet. When you Google Robert's name, this is literally the first thing that pops up, and that's that he could have been the Zodiac Killer. Now, the Zodiac is a particular interest of mine, so you can imagine I was thrilled when this connection popped up. But in all honesty, this does seem to me to be a bit of a stretch. I'll let you make up your own mind though. The Zodiac was a still unidentified serial killer who operated in Northern California in the late 60s. He had 5 known victims and targeted couples on lover's lanes. And although we don't know for sure that Robert lived in California when the Zodiac was active, the last place we know he was California in 1965. So he may have hung around to the late 60s and then committed the crimes. And there's also no denying that he does kind of resemble the famous composite sketch of the Zodiac Killer. He definitely wore the same type of glasses, at least. But neither the Zodiac nor Robert had any huge distinguishing features about them. I mean, they were just white men. It's pretty easy to argue that they could look alike. Without anything really distinguishing on their faces, they could look alike. Like, everyone could look like the Zodiac if you're just a white man with average features. Maybe the Zodiac theory could be better argued if you add in the fact there were also a number of similar murders in Ohio in the time that Robert was living there as well, in the early 60s. But you're going to have to take that face value because information on that is pretty sparse. I couldn't find really anything about said murders apart from the fact that they did happen. So yeah, you'll see people all over the internet trying to argue that Robert Ivan Nichols was the Zodiac Killer, but they actually have no real evidence to back it up apart from the fact that he lived in California and just looks like an average white man. And maybe he committed crimes because he was clearly on the run from something. It's very loose. In 2018, Robert's name was also brought up in connection with the 1989 murder of Amy Mihalevic, who was kidnapped from a shopping centre in Bay Village in Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland. I'm not sure exactly why they looked at Robert for this, because the chief literally said at the time they had no information that tied him to Amy's case, but they were just doing it in the ordinary course of their work. As far as anyone is aware, this lead went nowhere and no connection was found. Phil, Robert's son, has said that he struggles to believe that his father was a murderer, saying that despite his flaws, he was just a very gentle, quiet man. He thinks that the real solution is much more simple than most people want to admit. His father was just trying to avoid paying child support. And he has also admitted in the years since that in retrospect, his father did seem to be autistic, undiagnosed with no support and suffering PTSD from his time in the war. He was just a really troubled man. Whilst it is fascinating to ponder on great mysteries, to speculate about all the different types of crimes that Robert Nichols may have committed, I do personally think this is just a case of Occam's razor. The simplest answer is usually the correct one. I may be wrong, but I kind of hope I'm not. I think whatever way you look at it, Robert Nichols was a very troubled man. He'd seen a lot during the war, more than most people are ever going to see in their entire lives. He would have suffered unimaginable trauma, and that is going to play havoc on the brain. When he came back from the war, he just wasn't the same person that he was before. Maybe he just couldn't cope with the stress of having a wife, having children, having people rely on him. Maybe he convinced himself that he was bad for them, so he decided to remove himself.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
We do have the very ominous statement to his wife, "In time you'll know why," but that could just be a red herring here. Maybe he did genuinely think he'd done something, maybe he did think there was something that was going to come out, but maybe it wasn't something as awful as being a serial killer or being a murderer or a sex criminal. Maybe it was just something very, very tiny that he convinced himself was going to cause big problems. Or maybe there was nothing at all, maybe this wasn't even said. This all happened like 40 plus years ago, 50 plus years ago. I can't do that math, a long time ago. I would be really fascinated to know where he was in that 13 years though. Like, that's 13 years completely unaccounted for. Like, what name was he living under in that time? Because surely it wasn't Robert Nichols. There's no records of him in that time at all. But regardless, the US Marshals are still very interested to find out more about this man. Like, who was he? What was he running from? Where was he in that 13 years? That's what I want to know. So if you do have any information, the contact details will be in the description box. And with that, I'll see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.